Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Bill Raggio, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, my colleague and co-host, and we go immediately to Israel. Seth Frantzman of the Jerusalem Post and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing on Gaza, commenting on Hezbollah. Seth is the author of Drone Wars, Pioneers, Killing Machines, Artificial Intelligence, and the Battle for the Future, written so close to the future that it's very spooky to see what Seth was identifying as the possible. Right now, it's in Ukraine, it's in Gaza, it's in Darien Gap. The drones are not only surveillance, they strike. However, we're looking at, from the air, airdrops. Airdrops increase in Gaza as new method to deliver aid. Seth, a very good evening to you. The airdrops surprised me. I saw some of the packages landing at the edge of the water. Right now, several days later, what is the mission here? How long will it continue? And is it regarded as successful already? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, since the beginning of the war, there have been airdrops in Gaza. The Jordanians were the first to do it. That's, I assume, because of the close relationship between Jordan and Israel. In some extent, the Jordanians are, of course, against the operation in Gaza, but there is, some sort of security relationship, and they have very close ties with Washington. So also, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to fly from Amman over Israel to Gaza. So there was already an air corridor to do some drops, also because it helped to bring medical aid to field hospitals. It was easier to drop things to them than it was to cart them through the Egyptian desert and wait in line with trucks and things. Now, fast forward to the just recently. So the Jordanian airdrop or air corridor continues, and they've been getting support from France and the UK and the UAE and others to do what they're doing. The Americans have now kind of jumped in there with this with an airdrop over the weekend, which was a response to a huge stampede in northern Gaza, where they had brought in, the IDF had kind of opened a corridor or a way that trucks could get in. And the trucks drove through the IDF lines into Gaza, a few miles in with imagine tanks on both sides. Then the trucks, got out of that area. And then when the trucks got to where the Gazan civilians are, because there's about 300,000 civilians in northern Gaza, the civilians, as you can imagine, swarmed the trucks and began to try to get what they could get. And then I guess the drivers got a bit anxious and there was a stampede and people got run over and it was a huge disaster. So, the U.S. then said, "We're shocked to see these images. Why don't we add to the airdrop capabilities by dropping in food? Because if you drop in food, apparently, the chances, I guess, of a stampede or truckers driving over people or something is less. And also, why are they dropping it along the water? I think because that's an area that's pretty far usually from where the IDF forces are. And the idea is not to end up with, the parcels falling in the middle of tanks and things and civilians rushing in, and you inevitably then have the chances for clashes. So that's kind of where we are. It's an interesting thing. At the end of the day, airdrops can supply people. Historically, they have. They don't usually supply, people have said, well, what about the 2 million people in Gaza? No one's trying to supply 2 million people. They're trying to supply 50,000 or so here and there in the north or something. And that historically is something you can do with airdrops. Deir ez-Zor was supplied by the WFP, the World Food Program, through airdrops for several years during the Syrian Civil War. Of course, in that case, they were supplying the Assad regime in a sense, even though it was cut off by or under siege by ISIS. So, but, that's where we are today. It's not entirely clear what comes next.
And the airdrops will continue indefinitely, to your knowledge, Seth?
Well, it's not, again, it's not clear. I think they will continue, and I think it's a new, phase, I want to say, of the war, because I think that once you start getting the United States Air Force involved in airdrops, and you start to have the more Jordanians and other people involved, then it's a big problem, because it's not clear how you get out of that. Let's say, for instance, 50,000 or 100,000 people are then dependent on the airdrops. How do you find a way to wind that down without getting the Israelis or someone else to say, okay, we'll pick up the slack? Obviously, Israel has been very clear. They don't want to be involved in being a humanitarian provider for Gaza. They don't want a civil affairs. They don't want to set up IDP camps and stuff. So that's basically where we are at the moment.
Bill, you have a question for Seth.
Yes, Seth. Hello. And the Israeli government, or the U.S. government, the Biden administration, is pressuring the Israeli government to come to a ceasefire agreement with Hamas for Ramadan. The pressure has been pretty intense. What are the odds that the Israeli government is going to settle for a negotiated settlement? The last I heard was 6 weeks with a prisoner slash hostage exchange that is weighted in favor of Hamas. What are the odds of this going through?
I don't know, 50% maybe. I mean, look, it's a very difficult thing. And the latest stories we've been told, if they're accurate, are pretty shocking. We're being told that Israel is basically begging or asking Hamas and the handlers or hosts of Hamas in Qatar for a list of the living hostages. There's about 134 hostages. Israel's already said that they think around 20 or 30 are dead, perished. Some of those people, bodies were kidnapped on October 7th. They'd known they were dead for a while. But, you know, this now is a new thing, a new macabre kind of thing that Hamas is floating, that there's Hamas is, you know, hinting at lots more are dead. And you start to ask yourself, wait a second, I don't understand. I mean, when you do hostage negotiations, how could you even begin the negotiation without knowing who's alive or dead? I mean, in any situation. So it's very troubling to wonder if Hamas has been playing Israel this whole time, or if the talks were not serious, or if this is just being leaked, but in fact, there is a list. It's very, very problematic. How can you get within 3 or 4 days of the hostage deal and not know who's alive when the deal is supposed to be for at least a minimum of 40 living hostages? Because Israel doesn't want to do deals for dead bodies. I mean, the priority is human life, obviously. So it's very shocking. It's very problematic. I don't understand how you could get to that point. And I don't really understand how you would pull the rabbit out of the hat in about 5 days in negotiations that didn't work for months. Now, you could argue that there's a pressure point there. The question is, which side thinks they're winning? It would seem to me Hamas thinks they're winning, because Hamas is the one saying, we're not going to give you a list. Hamas is the one that basically thinks international pressure will force Israel into a ceasefire. I assume Hamas is being told that by its hosts and its handlers and patrons in several different countries who are very, you know, Hamas has very powerful backers, and those backers have friends and levers in the West. So it's not just Yahya Sinwar sitting up at night not knowing what to do. Also, there's another bizarre story that keeps coming out, which is they say Hamas leader Sinwar is not in touch with all the people holding the hostages or all the battalion commanders. The Hamas has played this game throughout the war, which is to pretend they don't know who holds the hostages. And then the question is, well, okay, if you don't hold them, well, then we'll just go get them. And it doesn't, it's a bit of a catch-22, doesn't make sense. So either Hamas is lying, or they're just feeding that to people. There's a lot of big problems there, and you have to say to yourself, well, how do you get the rabbit out of the hat? And suddenly everyone says, oh, we had the list and we have all the hostages, and now we're going to do, you know, what you said, 6 weeks of, you know, a few hostages a day being released. The rumors was like one a day. I don't understand how the Israeli public can be put through the trauma and horror of waiting every day for one person to be released. Again, the whole thing looks like a very bad scenario in which Hamas appears to continue to run this game and this very macabre, cynical, you know, just traumatizing game that it's playing that is really unacceptable. And you would think at some point someone would draw a red line and say this is just unacceptable and it's going to stop.
We're speaking with Seth Frantzman of the Jerusalem Post and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Bill Raggio is here as well. When we come back, Khan Yunis. Combat continues and Hezbollah. Provocation continues. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.